Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. How was your weekend? Bizarre stuff occurring. Paying attention to all this stuff? By this stuff, I mean North Africa and developments that are starting to percolate now in other Arabic countries. I wonder, I spent a lot of time this weekend thinking or reading or researching, you know, trying to conclude what it is we are seeing. What this revolution in Egypt represents, and Tunisia, and what's going on in Jordan, even as we speak, and what's going to come next, and how this is going to affect, I can't help but think this, not trying to be a typically egocentric American, but how all this affects our country. Too bad that it does, but it does massively. This hour, by the way, has been sponsored by Joe Bacon. He writes, Mike, it's my birthday today. My wish is that you keep doing what you're doing, telling the truth. Also, a big shout out to Kathy and Molly, too. Thanks, Joe. Thank you, Joe. Happy birthday. Tomorrow is supposed to be a day of a million turning out in Egypt, in Cairo. Actually, it's today in Egypt. It's already morning there. All we can do is watch and report, even though there's an effort being made now by American capitalist interests, because after all, there is the Suez Canal. Oh, my God! There is an interest being shown by the American business community. They have prevailed upon President Obama to send a former Enron Wonder Boys. I'm surprised they didn't send the Koch brothers. Of course, they're busy partying out in the desert, trying to figure out how they're going to slice and dice and divide the rest of what's left in this country. But we have sent a former Enron dude to speak on behalf of, to Mubarak, on behalf of the American capitalist community. You, listener, are not a capitalist, nor am I. We are worker bees, or we are unemployed worker bees, or we are something, but we are not capitalists. That now has been reserved for a select group of about, oh, I don't know, under a million people in this country. Considerably under a million. Anyway, the Obama administration has sent an envoy. I'm trying to find his name here. Damn it, it's lost in the pile. Too much stuff. Just too damn much stuff to wade through here. Gosh, I wish we had production assistants, don't you, Kathy? I wish we had a real job. You know, a whole staff like, oh, I don't know, like Rachel Maddow has, like, who else? You know what I mean. But the envoy we have sent is a guy who is there to probably to try to convince Mubarak that it's time for him to go. Oh, here it is. Frank Wisner is his name. Frank Wisner. Oh, my God. He is a former U.S. ambassador to Egypt. He's in Cairo. And he has been endowed with the ability, That's the words they're using to talk to Egyptian leaders. That's according to P.J. Crowley, the U.S. State Department spokesman, he said today. But no details given. Wisner was the ambassador from 1986 to 1991. And Wisner has, he's one of those people that just see, Zelig seems to show up just every place. Every place. Source Watch has quite a bit on Frank Wisner. He's the vice chairman of American International Group, AIG. Yeah, that AIG. He was sworn in as U.S. ambassador to India in 1994. While he was there, what he did was convince the Indians to, all sorts of stuff that had to do with American capitalists and American business. He was also U.S. ambassador to the Philippines from 1991, 1992, Egypt, 1986, 1991, Senior Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, April 82 to April 86. Ambassador to Zambia, August 79 to 82. Joined the State Department as a Foreign Service Officer in 1961. And went to Morocco, was assigned to Algeria. He was detailed to the U.S. Agency of International Development in Vietnam. Remained in Vietnam until 1968. What do you think of this guy, huh? Returning to Washington December 1968, Mr. Wisner was officer in charge of Tunisian Affairs, the State Department, where he remained until 1971. Oh, my God. Ah, what do you think of this guy? You never heard of him, have you? Nor have I. Frank Wisner, vice chairman, American International Group, former U.S. ambassador to Zambia, Egypt, India, Philippines, former undersecretary, U.S. Department of Defense and State. And he went to work for Enron. His father was a senior CIA official from 1947 until his suicide in 1965. His father was involved in the overthrow of President Arbenz of Guatemala in 1954, Mossadegh in Iran in 1953. Wisner Jr., the one we've just sent now to Egypt, was well known in the CIA. His boss while he was still alive was Kenneth Lay, Enron. Here's an example. When Wisner was U.S. ambassador to the Philippines, Enron was in the midst of negotiating to manage the two Subic Bay power plants. That's our big naval bases there. When Wisner left Manila in July 92, Enron won the deal and began to manage the plant in January 1993. Blah, blah, blah. So, ever heard of Frank Wisner? Neither have I. Ever seen his picture on television? Neither have I. Ever seen him reported by media? Neither have I. But go to sourcewatch.org and look up Frank G. Wisner, whose family has been involved in the overthrow of duly elected governments for decades. Where do we get these people? How do we cultivate people like this who have the seeming power and ability to slide in and out of countries that for some strange reason we either wind up at war with or they become our client states or we overthrow their governments or where do these people come from?
Rumors of war. I jump a damn ship to nice up the place. The final picker and red off them face. Make man and man have money to spend. And all the youth them know me and them friends. Rumors them spread. Aim that and send him me planting. But I'm an addy danny, naddy juggling. I feel rumors of war. Sit, no have no tear. True scars, a few will capture the fear.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
This hour is sponsored by Joe Bacon. It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Joe. His birthday wish is that we keep doing what we're doing here, telling the truth. Also, a big shout-out he includes to Kathy and Molly. Thanks, Joe. Happy birthday. Roz found out, did some quick research, and found out that Wisner, the guy that for some reason the Obama administration has dispatched to Cairo, Wisner is married to Christine Degenais, former wife of Paul Sarkozy, and former stepmother of French President Nicolas Sarkozy. They have four children. Oh, my God. That tight little circle at the top of the world in terms of global population, they just run everything, don't they? A couple of emails here. Malachi writes, I wonder if anyone has realized what the implications of the Tunisian-Egyptian uprisings are. One of the justifications to this day of the invasion of Iraq is that we freed the Iraqi people from a despotic dictator and gave them democracy. Tony Blair to this day publicly uses that line of reasoning. However, the uprisings in Tunisia and Egypt show us that given time, people will rise up and overthrow dictatorships on their own without outside intervention. If the U.S. had just shown a bit of patience, then probably they would have thrown Hussein out on their own with healthier results. Yeah, well, we made sure that wouldn't happen because our clandestine activities causing terror inside Iraq before Saddam was gone. The Obama administration and the capitalists in this country are, I find it difficult to say they're surprised. How long did they think they could continue to keep, in the case of Egypt, 85 million people under their thumb? What kind of thinking? Mubarak should have been thrown out of office. You know, Mubarak was sitting, I think, one person away from Anwar Sadat reviewing the troops that day 31 years ago when all of a sudden the reviewing stand was attacked by people with Kalashnikovs and Uzis. Mubarak was injured in the hand. He was one of the first people to arise. I saw in a video today all the blood and gore. I forget how many people were killed that day, but Sadat was butchered. And Mubarak stood up while everybody else was still ducking and covering. Maybe Mubarak knew something, huh? We have supported this man for 30 years. We have even had the audacity to refer to him as President Mubarak. Our ridiculously stupid press publishes the results of the ridiculously rigged elections in Egypt under headlines that say things like 92% of the Egyptian voters provide vote of confidence to the government, that sort of crap. I hope that the people of Egypt succeed, regardless of the outcome. If the outcome is the Muslim Brotherhood sharing power, so be it. I think all religion is madness, but the United States has spent decades trying to convince even the Muslims themselves that they're insane. And they must remain under complete control of the despots that we put in power to control them. I wonder if it's coincidence. Not that anything is referential to the United States, although everything may be referential to the United States. But I wonder if there is any significance that as the United States, as empire, is slowly choking to death on its own bile and dissolving, people around the world are saying, we've had enough. We've had enough of 30 years of this dictator. When you think about the dictatorships that we have supported, the governments we've overthrown during the years of the Bush-Cheney crime family, I think the one thing that used to drive me insane more than anything else was to hear that stupid bastard from Texas say things like, they hate us because we buy houses. They hate us because we have damaged them severely. Oh, the Koch brothers had Glenn Beck as one of their featured speakers at the little corrupt, filthy murder party they had in, where is it, Palm Springs? Over the weekend? That figures. We'll be right back. Speak the truth, don't speak so.
A soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Joe Bacon. It's his birthday. He writes, my wishes that you keep doing what you're doing, telling the truth. Also, a big shout out to Kathy and Molly, too. Thanks. Thank you. Happy birthday, Joe. Well, by the way, March 19th. Don't forget, March 19th in Washington, D.C., anti-war demonstration. It'll be, 8 years since we invaded Iraq? Is that right? 8? Boy, time rips by when you're having a good time, doesn't it? I'm going to be there. Are you going to be there? March 19th. It's a Saturday. A couple of days before spring. You ever been to Washington in the spring? Jerry in Minneapolis writes, Egypt, will it spread across the Middle East? What will it do to gas prices? Maybe we need to invest in light commuter trains, light rail, and biofuels, green energy. Maybe so. Ooh, the Suez Canal. Ooh, if we don't have Mubarak, we're at the mercy of the terrorists. The terrorists, they're everywhere. Ooh, we have to support Mubarak. Overthrow the bastard and get it done with. Seriously. If the Suez Canal ceases to be the gateway between actually, all four hemispheres, northern, southern, eastern, western. If that should occur, if the Suez Canal is no longer used because of, for whatever reason, new landlords, maybe, then maybe various countries around the planet will figure out what they did before 1859. Oh, that's right. They went around the Horn of Africa to get their green tea from India. But maybe we'll figure out a better way to conduct our own business in the United States if the Suez Canal becomes under the rules laid out by the new landlords. If there is such a thing, I mean, if there are such things, the new landlords take over the Suez Canal, maybe the rules will cause us to think, well, why are we still doing this? Why are we still shoring up and supporting dictatorships like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait? Why are we playing head games with the Iranians? Why did we go into Iraq and murder a million people? Why don't we leave the Syrians alone? What is our role with Israel in these days anyway? What do we have going with Gaddafi? We killed one of his stepchildren a few years ago with a bombing run. Algeria, maybe we'll focus north. After all, I've read something today that in this year, I believe, in 2011, or maybe it's next year, the United States will begin getting the major part of its oil imports from the oil tar sand fields in Canada. Is that right? Am I right about that? I don't know. That's what I read. I'm sure somebody will send me an email and say, no, it's not. That's not it. Which I appreciate if that's not it. Suez Canal. Following headline is from an article by Barak Arvid in Common Dreams today. Israel urges world to curb criticism of Egypt's Mubarak. And the subhead, Jerusalem seeks to convince its allies that it is in the West's interest to maintain the stability of the Egyptian regime. In other words, continue to support the dictator. After 30 years, freedom, give me a break. Justice, please. Liberty, equality, solidarity, continue to support the torturer. Mubarak serves a grand function, his government. I don't know how coherent he is. How old is he? 83? He serves a specific function for the world's democracies, such as ours, where, you know, we're not supposed to be torturing people. That's where we send people to be tortured, among other places. Syria is another one. Roz writes, Mike, I just wanted to say that with Obama's refusal to take sides in the Egyptian uprising, he has proven himself to be the hypocrite in chief. And he's alienating himself from the Egyptian people and risks losing their goodwill in the future. Let me interject something here in Roz's email. Remember the first place that Obama had promised to give a speech in the Muslim world, and the place he went to was Cairo. Remember that, the Cairo speech, where he was warmly received by the people because he talked revolution. He talked rebellion. He talked about overthrowing these dictatorships. Well, not directly, but, you know, I mean. But that was before he was president, right? Yeah. He was still candidate, Barack Obama. So he had the liberty of talking about freedom and justice and dignity and overthrowing dictatorships and ending the rule of 99% of the population by 1% of the population. When you're a candidate, you can do that. Once you get elected, based on your rhetoric, certainly not based on your record, but based on your rhetoric, then you can reveal that it was only rhetoric to begin with. But wasn't it Barack Obama who suggested to the people of Egypt that they rebel and overthrow the dictator? I think it was. Back to Roz. As long as the U.S. and Israel can still call the shots and feel safe, quote, they couldn't care less about the misfortunes of the Palestinians or the Egyptians. How truly disgusting. As for the armament companies, well, they're just wringing their hands in despair. What if peace should break out in the Mideast? There go their profits. Roz continues, everybody has been asking that mealy-mouthed Tony Blair for his opinion, and it's just as wishy-washy as Obama's. You know, if Israel only did the right thing toward the Palestinians, then there would be no need to bribe Egypt for cooperation. I'm sure it would be given freely, and there would be no need to prop up these vile dictators. I, for one, am rejoicing, Roz writes, that these people have finally lost their fear, the people of Egypt, and seem to be successfully challenging the regime. By the way, Canada's wimpy Prime Minister Harper hasn't exactly been an inspiration for the Egyptians either. All crooked administrations live in terror of the people losing their fear, and finally, it has come to pass. In Tunisia and Egypt, anyway. Roz. Yeah, dissent, or the attempt to establish political freedom in Egypt, over the decades has been met with torture of the most gruesome kind. The Egyptians the Egyptian authorities, I should say, have no hesitation or compunction about severe torture up to and including death of their political enemies. This is well known. This is understood. This is why it has taken 30 years for the people to finally, when they see a neighbor to the west, Tunisia, do essentially the same thing, to say we've had enough. We've had a goddamn enough of this. We've had enough. How many people living under how many dictatorships or how many capitalist-sponsored dictatorships are thinking tonight, haven't we had enough too? I wonder. I can't help but wonder. How many oppressed people are, whether they're in Africa or South Asia or Southeast Asia? So many revolutions have occurred in South America that even though the right wing is attempting in various countries down there to destabilize governments and reestablish their authority, their military dictatorships, greased into power by the Catholic Church, who always tells the people in these countries, oh, be quiet, you'll get your reward when you die. Just be quiet, make sure you give money to the church, pray, do your novenas, don't worry, buy some candles, get your pesos out, you know. So many revolutions have occurred over the past 20 or 30 years in South America. You know what's going to happen next? I wonder if the Mexicans are paying attention to what is going on in Egypt. I wonder if the Mexicans are thinking to themselves, why do we continue to live in a failed state that is run by a handful of dictators, a handful of not just capitalist dictators, but now narco dictators? When are we going to rise up? Problem with the Mexican people, of course, is that the drug cartels, the drug lords, have more weaponry than probably the United States Marine Corps and don't hesitate to use it. But if one had to pick the next country to explode outside of the Middle East, wouldn't it be Mexico? I guess we'll have to wait and see, huh?
To listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
Most peculiar, mama.
And this hour has been sponsored by Joe Bacon. It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Joe. He says, my wish is that you keep doing what you're doing, telling the truth. And a big shout-out to Kathy and Molly, too. Thanks, Joe Bacon, for sponsoring the hour. I've got something to tell you. True Seekers, Valentine's Day is coming up soon. Do you get nice things for your sweetie? Do you? Is that? A lot of people are very cynical about that. Not me. I hope you're not. Better plan ahead and avoid the last-minute rush. I use Pro Flowers now, so they're offering my listeners an incredible deal. For this week only, you can order the 100 Blooms of Love which comes with a free glass vase for only $19.99. And for my listeners only, just you folks, you can get an exclusive upgrade. You can add chocolates, a teddy bear, and a lavender bath kit for just $10 more. Imagine the look on your sweetheart's face when he or she sees this huge bouquet with all the extras. These blooms have guaranteed Valentine's Day delivery and are guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least a week. Now, here's what you do. Just call 800-PRO-FLOWERS and mention Malloy, or go to proflowers.com, click on the microphone in the top right corner and type in Malloy. This offer expires Friday. Oh, it's today, Monday. Expires Friday, so order now. Okay? I have gotten these blooms, and they're gorgeous. They really are. They are very, very, very pretty. It's hard to talk about pretty things when the world is exploding. You know what I'm saying? But there is still beauty, my dear. There is still beauty out there, right? Susan from Squim writes, Mike, like a lot of truth seekers, I've been trying to get all the latest information regarding the demonstrations in Egypt. The American news channels are proven to be deeply lacking in getting the latest Egyptian news to us. I notice most of CNN and MSNBC shots are the live feed from Al Jazeera's English news channel. So, I flipped through my cable guide, no Jazeera. I went to the net only to find that its channels were so jammed with Americans trying to get to their live feed that it was crashing browsers. I gave up on Safari and went to Firefox, only to get the same result. Finally, I was able to find a feed to Al Jazeera on the Real Player channel that didn't crash. I was riveted to it all weekend on the laptop and cannot help but make contrast to the crap on my television set. Since watching Al Jazeera, I've been struck by how professional that channel is. The news doesn't seem to be slanted in any direction other than getting the information out and in interviewing as many people on all facets of the topic at hand. I find myself waiting to see more coverage from them on other topics. Let me digress for a moment. Yes, absolutely. English.aljazeera.com, I believe, is the address. Susan goes on, the crisis in Egypt has brought home the fact that news on television in the U.S. seems as censored as it is in many third world countries. Even on cable or satellite, we get offered 500 plus channels of pap and crap. All about the same. It's all just mainstream media, mostly owned by a small handful of very large American media companies with very little independent U.S. news and almost nothing from other countries. You can get Al Jazeera English on cable in Washington, D.C., I hear, and a few other cities, but nowhere else. There is no Russian Times English channel, which carries a lot of lefty shows. There's no free speech TV channel on most systems. Dish TV, I think, is all that offers it. We get a bit of TV from England, not much, just BBC, PAP, and one or two channels out of Canada. There are plenty of English-speaking stations in the world, and we get none of them, really. I think it's important for Americans to have access to other world outlets to see what other countries make of our activities, both home and around the world. So, to try and become better informed, we truth seekers have got to go online to get the news, to bring up the online versions of those channels mentioned above, as well as the news blogs, newspapers, and Ustream talk shows, like yours. But now that Comcast is positioning itself to take over the net, I'm beginning to wonder how long before we can't get news on the internet either. So the next time we hear someone express shock at the Chinese or blocking more internet sites and cable TV stations from their citizens, we should look at our own program guides. Are they much better? Susan. The idea of a free, unfettered, and available press, you know, is something that I think any group of people, our framers included, who really are seriously talking about liberty, even if they're flawed in that conversation at the beginning, like ours were, they include the reality of a free, uncensored press. How else are the people to learn things? I mean, seriously. How many of the 300 million of us can go to Washington and sit in on a session of one of these punk-ass House committees or Senate committees while they decide further how to carve up what's left of this country and put it in the hands of the 1% that already own 99% of everything? I mean, how many people can go hear these jackasses do that? So we must have a free and unfettered media, a press, whatever you want to call it, so that we understand what the rat bastards are doing and then stop them. Why does it seem it is so difficult for people in this country to stop the process that is occurring, that has been occurring for the past 30 years, to destroy our jobs, to destroy the basic social fabric of this country, to turn us against each other, to take away what few social safety net programs are available? Why is it so difficult for Americans to, just in equal proportion to other countries, take to the streets and say, no, we've had enough? Why? I have no answer. Brought to you by Sanford Foreman of Mercury Wine Club, who brings you boutique California wines. For Valentine's Day specials, go to mercurywineclub.com. mercurywineclub.com. Or you can call them. Do we get phone numbers over the air? 310-791-4423. Thank you, Sanford Foreman. Reg at TVNewsLies.org writes, historically, the United... Oh, by the way, it's Al Jazeera dot... or English.AlJazeera.net. I think I said .com. Sorry. But you're smart. You'll figure that out, right? Reg writes, historically, the United States has supported democratically elected leaders in other countries only if our government is able to control the newly elected officials or if we approve of their worldview. When that is not possible, we see to it that the change does not take place for long. Two examples that immediately come to mind are the CIA-backed assassinations of Allende, assassination of Allende in Chile, and our role in the elections in Algeria in the 90s. But of course, we rewrite history to demonize everyone we don't like and to justify and glorify every crime committed in our name. Earlier this week, the Washington Post printed in an op-ed by, of all people, Elliot Abrams, that extolled Bush's invasion of Iraq as an act of heroic and brilliant foreign policy Abrams, a convicted felon and PNAC thug, credited Bush with foreseeing the demands for democracy by Tunisians and Egyptians. Redemption for Bush, it seems, will be his legacy. And Reg put the link in here. It was a few days ago, 28th. Elliot Abrams, a thug, a murderer, a killer, another one of the Henry Kissinger's school of political assassins, kill as many as you can, just don't leave your fingerprints. Talking about the aspirations of freedom by people in the Middle East. Elliot Abrams is a Likudnik from the word go. He doesn't want to see freedom in the Middle East. He wants to see repressive regime after repressive regime forever. Elliot Abrams is another one. When he steps off this mortal coil into whatever infinity is waiting for him, the earth will be a little bit better place to exist on. I realize that's a poorly constructed sentence, but you know what I'm saying. Elliot Abrams, for Christ's sake, lecturing about freedom and that George Bush was prescient in his understanding of the globe. The globe to George W. Bush was one of those little snow things that you pick up and shake in your office. That was the globe to that halfwit. Oh, my God. Tomorrow or today, let's stay in our time zone. Tomorrow's demonstrations in Egypt are being talked about in advance as the apex of these demonstrations that have gone on now for a week. As reported by McClatchy newspapers, Egyptian protesters plan the march tomorrow to Mubarak's doorstep. And they write, in the fight to save his embattled regime from a popular revolt, U.S. allied President Hosni Mubarak's administration has severed the phone and internet, rounded up journalists, closed banks, dispatched riot police to beat back protesters. Today, Monday, the government halted all trains throughout the country to prevent Egyptians in outlying provinces from joining throngs of protesters in Cairo, who are planning an audacious march, on the presidential compound on Tuesday. As Mubarak resorts to a measure deemed extraordinary even by the standards of Middle East autocrats, demonstrators pledged to keep up the rebellion until the president steps down. An activist yelled into a bullhorn in downtown Cairo's Tahrir Square today, quote, "Each of you here today, bring three more tomorrow. If you love Egypt, you will come." I've also read reports that the army says they will not fire on Egyptian citizens. Chinese army said the same thing right before Tiananmen. Man. Isn't it interesting that rebellions or revolutions or revolts or finally an effort is made to throw off dictatorships in so many countries where we installed the dictator? Or we, the United States, supported the dictator, made sure that he stayed in power. I wonder if the bagger freaks in this country or the dumbass Republicans or the brain-dead conservatives ever consider that, while they're sitting around figuring out ways to sue Obama because of what they call Obamacare. You know, the world is going up in flames, and the teabaggers, what was it, down in Florida now, some judge, that's unconstitutional. Okay. All right. But why doesn't it occur, or why doesn't it register? I know the answer, but I'm you know, the question is purely rhetorical. Why does it not register with the average American that so many of these explosions only come after years, if not decades, of suppression and oppression, brought about by U.S. backing. Those Abrams tanks rolling down the street. What are they? What is their full designation? No, don't write to me. They're Abrams tanks. They're ours. These are tanks bought by Mubarak from American death manufacturers. I heard today that in some instances the pieces are assembled. They're shipped to Egypt unassembled and assembled in Egypt. I guess that's to give somebody in this country a little cover. The fighter jets screaming across the skies around Alexandria and Cairo, they're American. Paid for with U.S. tax dollars that were given to Mubarak in the form of grants. What is it, $1 billion, $2 billion a year, 80% or 90% of which doesn't go for sewers and education and hospitals, but goes for this weaponry. Torture facilities, murder, mayhem, suppression, oppression. Why don't the teabaggers or these filthy, disgusting Republicans ever bring that up? But we Americans just kind of sit around, not you, I'm not talking about you. I'm damn sure not talking about me. But we sit around in our ignorance, don't we? We just sit in our fetid little pool of ignorance. And talk about the bastard in the White House who was born in Libya. Or, no, not Libya, Kenya. Where's his birth certificate? God damn it, I want to see his birth certificate. How can that be the extent of so many people's political consciousness in this country? How can that be? We'll be right back.
You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say?
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
This hour is sponsored by Sanford Foreman of Mercury Wine Club. He brings you boutique California wines for Valentine's Day specials. Go to mercurywineclub.com or call him 310-791-4423. There's been a gathering of vermin, the kind of American vermin that are hell-bent on destroying what's left of this country. Sponsored by the Koch brothers, the two thugs that are leaders in this destruction of America. Guardian the UK puts it this way, prominent figures on both the right and left of the U.S. political spectrum gathered in the luxury enclave of Rancho Mirage in the California desert today amid increasingly heated debate about the influence of the secrecy-loving billionaires Charles and David Koch on the political process. The influence. Why do a couple of secrecy-loving billionaires have any influence on the political process at all? Do you ever ask yourself that question? Isn't this country one person, one vote?
Yeah, you're right.
So Charles and David Koch should have two votes, the same as you and your spouse, or you and your partner, or you and your adult son or daughter, right? Huh? So they're billionaires, so what? Guardian says about 200 key figures in business, energy, the media, and law assembled at a 5-star hotel at the invitation of the Koch brothers for the latest of their twice-yearly discussion groups on how to forward their libertarian causes. Libertarian? Libertarian my ass. Their fascist causes. Libertarian. The Koch brothers, who have used every single device available to them, put in place by the federal government to amass their billions in profits and wealth. Libertarian my ass. The talks began at 1 p.m. with sessions that focus on how to fight the Obama administration, which the Kochs see as a threat to the free market and unfettered wealth. What does unfettered wealth mean in this context? It means that these filthy goddamn Koch brothers want the right to come into your house and remove your wallet. They want the right to make sure that you have no health care unless it's through a company they might own. They want the right to push poison into your lungs, your stomach, your brains, and goddamn any Negro administration that would attempt to thwart them. That's what unfettered wealth means. As the attendees arrived in their private jets, they were greeted by an airship that circled over the hotel's golf courses and tennis courts bearing the logo, Koch Brothers Dirty Money. It was sent up by Greenpeace, which has joined forces with several other organizations to hold a counter rally to the Koch meeting. Oh, God. Why do we have people like the Koch brothers in positions inside this society, positions of power? I know it's their money. So why isn't their money taken from them? It's blood money. It's money that they have accumulated by destroying anything and everything they touch. Why isn't their wealth confiscated? Why isn't it taken from them? And why are they not told, okay, look, here, we'll make sure we're going to take your money and put it in a trust fund that's going to pay for education for people and health care for people and respiratory therapy for people because of the puke and filth you've put in the environment. But here's what we'll do. We'll make sure. What's the average family income in this country? 40 grand? We'll make sure you have $50,000 a year, you two parasites, you two worms. We'll make sure you have $50,000 a year to live on for the rest of your bloody lives. But the rest of it we're taking from you. Why is that not just understood as a natural consequence of what these pigs have done? They've destroyed the environment. They've destroyed people's bodies and minds. They're destroying the political system. They're destroying the economic system. They're destroying everything they can get their goddamn filthy hands on. And why do they do it? Because they can. The same reason your pet dog, if he's a male, will sit down and lick his crotch whenever he can. The Koch brothers subscribe to that same idea.
seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this hour is sponsored by Sanford Foreman, who is with Mercury Wine Club and brings you boutique California wines for Valentine's Day specials. Go to mercurywineclub.com or call them 310-791-4423. Income equality in the United States, according to Think Progress, is worse than in Egypt. Really? No. What does it say here? One of the driving factors behind the protests is the decades-long stagnation of the Egyptian economy and a growing sense of inequality. Spokesman at the International Institute for Strategic Studies in the Middle East said, quote, they're all protesting about growing inequalities. They're all protesting against growing nepotism. The top of the pyramid was getting richer and richer, end quote. As a former diplomatic attaché at the Egyptian Ministry of Foreign Affairs wrote in Foreign Policy recently, quote, income equality has reached levels not before seen in Egypt's modern history, end quote. But according to Think Progress, Egypt still beats quite a few countries when it comes to income inequality, including the United States. According to the CIA World Factbook, you can take that for whatever it's worth, the U.S. is ranked as the 42nd most unequal country in the world. In contrast, Tunisia is ranked the 67th most unequal country. Yemen is ranked the 76th. Egypt is ranked the 90th. The income inequality in the U.S. is the worst it has been since the 1920s. Currently, the top 1% of households make nearly 25% of the total income in this country. They made less than 10% in the 70s. According to the latest data, quote, the gaps in after-tax income between the richest 1% of Americans and the middle and poorest fifths of the country more than tripled between 1979 and 2007. It just goes on. I know these kind of statistics just make my eyes glaze over, too. But if one of the drivers of this revolution in Egypt is income inequality, I would think that the Koch brothers would pay close attention. Of course, I guess they figure if the hell begins, they can board their private 747s and escape to a friendly country where they'll be safe. As income inequality continues, though, there's something else to consider, and that is the scarcity of food and water that is right over the horizon. You know, every day somebody sends me a link to another horror story about what that will mean. And not that it's not going on now. It is going on now. Something like 1.5 billion people right now are suffering what is euphemistically called food inadequacy, or whatever the term is. It means they're hungry or starving to death. Isn't that about 20% of the world's population, or is it 25%? Water. You know, a planet that is three-fourths... the surface of which is three-fourths water. We haven't yet figured out the most efficient way to turn salt water into fresh water. And not only do we not do that, but we then turn around and deliberately and consciously, at least capitalist America does, pollute the water that we have available, make it undrinkable. Just in defiance of everything that every kind of logical response, in defiance of common sense, morality, ethical conduct, the capitalists in this country, all countries, just say, nah, to hell with it. Here, dump it. Just give me the money. Give me the money. Give me the money. Give me the money. I want the money. I think just about all of us who are still capable of thinking understand that the time of the Koch brothers and their ilk will eventually draw to a close. That people will not continue to allow 1% of the population of the country to decimate the other 90% or 95% or 99%. I mean, they can get away with it for a while. It always happens that way in the history of the human race. You know, the parasites, the parasitic bastards who contribute nothing. They manipulate. They manipulate natural resources. They manipulate cash flow or instruments, capitalist instruments of phony, funny money, until they're just wealthy as Midas, and then they start buying politicians and corrupting and polluting and destroying the political system. But eventually the bastards are no longer effective in doing that. Eventually, no matter what society it is, eventually, the pigs at the top are removed. You know that. Of course, it's been difficult during the American century for the people that we have designated as to be subservient to the pigs we've installed. It's been difficult during the American century because, you know, starting with the middle of the century, we were the only society, the only culture, the only manufacturing behemoth left standing. Everything else had been blown to pieces, destroyed. And what did we do with that? What did we do with that? We had a chance, didn't we? We had a great chance. The Marshall Plan, I mean, the Marshall Plan was like, wow, look, rebuilding Europe. Hey, hey. We had a chance to completely change the nature of predatory capitalism, gangster capitalism, but the greed heads said, no, we're not going to change. We're going to double down. First time a bitch pops his head up and talks about social justice, shoot him, hang him, behead him, invade his country, destroy his monetary system, lie about his people, lie about him or her or it. I mean, we had a chance. We had such a wonderful chance, didn't we? I have a missive from Bob Alexander that I guess we'll get to next hour. ConsortiumNews.com as a little preamble to a piece by Jeff Cohen. The editor writes, as the popular uprising challenges the pro-U.S. dictatorship in Egypt, Washington's cynical strategy of talking about democracy while relying on repressive Arab regimes to maintain order is entering a dangerous moment. Yeah, how many times have you heard that? Democracy this, democracy that. What about the ruling family in Kuwait? What about Jordan? What about Syria? Jordan and Syria, they just hand down the leadership from father to son. What about Algeria in the 90s, an uprising after an election because the wrong, just like Hamas was the wrong political faction to win in a free and open democratic election. So what happens? We talk democracy and force it into Gaza, and Hamas wins. Oh, no, wait. That's not what we're talking about. And the religious parties in Algeria won. Oh, no. So back the army to start murdering people. Over and over and over again. talk about democracy while relying on repressive era regimes to maintain order. Well, as the editors say, that is entering a dangerous moment. The course of this history could have been quite different. And Jeff Cohen notes this in his guest essay, which when we come back, it's very brief. When we come back from this break, I'm going to share with you. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Who said that? It's your president, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. And by the way, truth seekers, in case you didn't know, Valentine's Day is coming very soon. Better plan ahead and avoid the last minute rush. I use Pro Flowers. So guess what? They're offering my listeners an incredible deal. For this week only, you can order the 100 Blooms of Love, which comes with a free glass vase for only $19.99. And for my listeners only, you can get an exclusive upgrade. You can add chocolates, a teddy bear, and a lavender bath kit for just $10 more. Imagine the look on your sweetheart's face when he or she sees this huge bouquet with all the extras. The blooms have guaranteed Valentine's Day delivery and are guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days. Now, here's what you do. Call 800-PRO-FLOWERS and mention Malloy. Or go to the proflowers.com website, click on the microphone at the top right corner and type in Malloy. This offer expires Friday, so order now. Bruce writes in, the most ambitious, regarding our justice system, the most ambitious backyard meth cooker couldn't possibly destroy as many lives in his career as the Koch brothers do on a daily basis. The meth cooker gets life without parole, all his assets seized and his family thrown out on the street without a thought. The Koch brother lives on an estate that would make Louis the 16th blush. For sure. Absolutely. In the last year of his life, Martin Luther King Jr. questioned U.S. military intervention against progressive movements in the Third World by invoking a quote from JFK, "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." Were he alive to have witnessed the last 3 decades of U.S. foreign policy, Jeff Cohen writes, King might update that quote by noting, quote, those who make secular revolution impossible will make extreme Islamist revolution inevitable, end quote. For decades, beginning during the Cold War, U.S. policy in the Islamic world has been aimed at suppressing secular reformist and leftist movements. Beginning with the CIA-engineered coup against a secular democratic reform government in Iran in 1953, which was all about oil, of course. Washington's propped up dictators coaching these regimes in the black arts of torture and mayhem against secular liberals and the left. In these dictatorships, often the only places where people had freedom to meet and organize were mosques. And out of these mosques sometimes grew extreme Islamist movements. The Shah's torture state in Iran was brilliant at cleansing and murdering the left, a process that helped the rise of the Khomeini government and ultimately Iran's Islamic Republic. Yeah, and let me add to what Jeff Cohen has written. The Shah's torture state in Iran was set up and trained and fluffed out and made whole by the U.S. CIA. Growing out of what Dr. King called Washington's, quote, irrational, obsessive anti-communism, end quote, U.S. foreign policy also backed extreme Islamists over secular movements or governments that were either Soviet allied or feared to be. In Afghanistan, beginning before the Soviet invasion, and evolving into the biggest CIA covert operation in the 1980s, the U.S. armed and trained native Mujahideen fighters, some of whom went on to form the Taliban. To aid the Mujahideen, the U.S. recruited and brought to Afghanistan religious fanatics from the Arab world, some of whom went on to form Al-Qaeda. This is hardly obscure history, except in the U.S. mainstream media. One of the mantras of U.S. television news all day Friday just passed was, be fearful of the democratic uprising against U.S. allies in Egypt and Tunisia and elsewhere. After all, we were told by Fox News and CNN and Chris Matthews on MSNBC, it could end up as bad as when our ally in Iran was overthrown and the extremists came to power in 1979. You remember our ally there, the Shah of Iran? The murderer, torturer, miserable son of a bitch who guaranteed that we would have the kind of future that is now our present where it concerns Iran. Such talk comes easy in U.S. media where Egyptian victims of rape and torture in Mubarak's jails are never seen, where it's rarely emphasized that weapons of repression used against Egyptian demonstrators are paid for by U.S. taxpayers, where Mubarak is almost always called president and almost never dictator, which is what we call the elected president of Venezuela, right? When U.S. media glibly talk about the Egyptian and Tunisian presidents being valued allies in the war on terror, it's no surprise they offer no details about the prisoners the U.S. has renditioned to these pro-Western countries for torture. The truth is, no one knows how these uprisings will end. But revolution of some kind, as King Dr. King said, seems inevitable. Washington's corrupt Arab dictators will come down as surely as that statue of Saddam. If Washington took its seal off the Arab people and ended its embrace of the dictators, that could help secularists and Democrats win hearts and minds against extreme Islamists. Democracy is a great idea. Too bad it plays almost no role in U.S. foreign policy. Jeff Cohen writing at consortiumnews.com over the weekend. Why do so few of us get it? Why do so few of us understand the history of our own foreign policy? And why so many people around the world hate what we've done? We'll be back after the break. past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Welcome back. About 2 hours ago, I'm not very good at converting Greenwich Mean Time to Eastern Standard Time here in the U.S., but about 2 hours ago, Egypt's last working internet service provider, the Nour Group, was disconnected. That's according to a U.S. web monitoring company. This leaves Egypt completely, the entire country, completely offline. Renesis, I believe that's how it's pronounced, R-E-N-E-S-Y-S, a New Hampshire-based firm that monitors internet routing data in real time, said that the Nour network started disappearing from the internet around 20 hours, 46 minutes GMT. Renesis vice president said in a blog post, quote, they are completely unavailable at present, they being Egypt. Attempts by the French news agency to access Nour.net and other websites in Egypt serviced by the company, such as the Egyptian stock exchange site, were unsuccessful. The four main internet service providers in Egypt were cut off on Thursday. The move left the Nour Group as the only working internet provider, and now that's gone. Mobile telephone networks have also been severely disrupted in Egypt. Well, no surprise. Mubarak, with now, keep in mind that he has advisors there from the United States, from the capitalists who run this country, the gangster capitalists who run the United States. They have dispatched spokespeople to Egypt to tell Mubarak what to do. And apparently what he's been told to do is to shut off the internet, shut off the phone services, and kill the sons of bitches, as many of them as you can, terrorize your population, and dear God, Mubarak, maintain control. We have a lot of money invested in you, pal. We've been sending you billions and billions and billions. Besides, Netanyahu wants you to stay, too. Don't you think that would be the advice that is being given to Mubarak at this point? Man. I don't know. Like I say, I'm not sure. I'll tell you what let's do. Let's take some of your calls. We're going to open up the lines, and the number here is 877-996-2556. And see what you have to say about the Koch brothers or what is happening in Egypt. We don't normally take a lot of calls on this program, as you know, but if this has affected you as it has affected me, this revolution in Egypt and Tunisia and its spreading, then it has left you with a feeling of things are changing so rapidly and so out of U.S. control. And that's the part that's nerve-wracking, right? We've managed to, for decades, control either obviously or in a clandestine manner what goes on in places like Egypt. And all of a sudden, all of a sudden it's not working. Wait a minute. Why isn't it working? But it hasn't been working since, oh, I don't know when. What would be a good point? The Tet Offensive in 1968, would that be a good point of departure from where it was working and all of a sudden it wasn't working any longer? The idea that U.S. foreign policy could demand a course of action from our client states, and if not given that course of action, we could come in with military might and kill hundreds of thousands of their people until they realize, oh, Jesus, we better do what they say. Would the Tet Offensive, would that be a good starting point? Mo is in Cranford, New Jersey. I believe it's New Jersey, right, Mo?
Hey, yes, Mike, longtime listener. I've been listening to you for almost a decade. New Jersey loved you.
Oh, my God.
I know you don't like to get compliments, but let me tell you, I see people in New Jersey, friends that I know, they're huddled around their radio station. You are number one. Bless you. Anyway, I just wanted to make a quick point tonight. I won't stay too long. I'm a little nervous. The first time I ever called into a radio show.
Yeah.
But tonight I was watching the Ed Schultz show, and there was a colonel. I forgot what his name is. I think his name is Colonel Williams. He's a very well-known colonel that goes on the MSNBC shows and so forth. And he had made mention of how we actually support Israel, which, I mean, one of my best friends is Jewish, and actually a lot of my close friends are Jewish, so I'm not saying anything against Israel, but I'm saying how they said it on TV. How America supports Israel, due to that fact, that's why a lot of these Middle Eastern countries are, you know, sometimes they go a little nuts and whatnot. But I remember years ago you had stated that you kind of got into a little thing with Ed Schultz over that, where you had made just a question about, you know, can we be a little bit more fair and strike a more balanced policy with Israel and whatnot? Mm-hmm. And I remember you had said that Ed Schultz kind of was a little bit aggressive with you. It was some kind of a conference you were in, but I remembered that. And I just want to give light to it of how right you were, because that colonel asked him the same question tonight on his show at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I felt right when he asked him that, Ed Schultz just, like, stopped, and he just, you know, needed to change the topic and get to another topic. And I was like, that is amazing, because Mike Malloy years ago in one of the shows stated that, and I just wanted to give light that almost everything that you say comes to fruition. I'm a history teacher here in New Jersey, and like I said, New Jersey loves you, man. Your voice is a voice of reason. I wish there was more Mike Malloy's around, and let me tell you, almost everything that you say, word for word, it comes to light. When Ed Schultz paused today, and that colonel asked him that, it was just a question. It's nothing against Israel. It's just a question. I mean, if we strike a more fair and balanced policy in Israel, we won't have all this explosion going on in the Middle East and whatnot. And I just saw Mike Malloy when that colonel was asking that. And I was like, you know what, Ed Schultz, you should chill with this whole Mike Malloy thing, because I know that he had brought you on his TV show months ago about saying something about you. But anyway, I like Ed Schultz personally. But I don't like this divisiveness between, sometimes, you know, they say far left, far right. Like Keith Olbermann said, you can't compare the two. But I really think tonight Ed Schultz is thinking about you, and he's saying, Mike Malloy, I am very, very sorry. And do you remember that story I'm talking about? You mentioned that years ago.
It had its roots in the fact that Ed Schultz always got his rather large bloomers in a wad because he didn't get selected to be on Air America, which I had nothing whatsoever to do with. And we were at a public forum one time, and it just out of nowhere, he leaned in and said, "Well, don't you think the Jewish people deserve a homeland?" It was a complete non sequitur. And I just looked at him, and you know, the only reason he did it, I think he was trying to get his position with MSNBC at the time, and I don't know. Hey, listen, Mo, I got a break. Thanks. I appreciate it. Nice words. Thanks for the compliments, although, you know, I get weird about compliments. But thanks, Mo. I appreciate it. Yeah.
conservatives. Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Nora is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Nora.
Hey there, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was responding about your question about the percentages of tar sands oil. I went to an event and heard about Minnesota's thing is we got these pipelines coming in, so now 80% of the petroleum processed in Minnesota comes from Alberta tar sands.
Huh.
And I'd like to say, please, everyone, stop with the petroleum crap. Please stop. They boil the earth and stuff, and they make these huge, giant waste tailings things. An entire flock of birds tried to land there and just went dead and stuff. And that gets repeated, and it's just, it's so huge you can't imagine how huge. It makes New York City look small. These giant earth-moving things that they're doing to get this oil out.
Uh-huh.
It's horrendous.
Well, I read something today. This oil, so-called, is so polluted, corrupted, whatever, with the dirt, the sand, the earth. I know I'm not using the right terms here, but the separation of the oil from the contaminants requires about three times more energy than the oil itself will.
It's so horrendous. It's like a horror movie. The amount of water, the amount of huge earth-moving giant things that look like, it looks like a skyscraper, yet it's rolling on wheels or something.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
right.
They're just horrendous. It's like their purpose. It looks like their purpose is to completely rape
and destroy
the world.
As long as we have oil companies operating on this planet, I don't care where they operate. As long as they are operating, the country, the planet itself is condemned to death, absolutely and utterly condemned to death. And the executives and the shareholders who run these oil companies and own these oil companies, I don't know how they think that they will have a supply of oxygen or a supply of water or a supply of unpolluted earth strictly for their use when what they are doing to the planet finally murders it. And I think as long as oil companies are allowed to continue to do this, the people of this planet are willingly participating in their own mass suicide. I don't understand it, Nora. And thanks, Nora. Appreciate you checking in. I have no idea why our species is hell-bent on self-destruction. And in this manner, I mean, it's not just war and the attendant degradation of the environment that comes with that, but the fact that we have companies, that coal companies and oil companies and gas companies, that are just goddamn determined to destroy everything, and we, and by we I mean Germans and Chinese and Americans and South Africans Chileans, Mexicans, we just sit back and allow it to happen. We don't do anything. I don't understand that. I, honest to God, don't understand that. Why? When we know, and I don't care what the teabag freak bastards or to hell with them. They get a lot of publicity and a lot of attention by this whorish media that we have in this country. But the teabaggers themselves are a bump on the ass of history. They will soon be gone, like every one of these disgusting, penny ante right wing moves, movements. They will. But I don't understand why the ignorance in this country and globally is so monumental I mean, it's staring us right in the face. What's going on? And we wander around with these half-wits talking about whether or not Barack Obama was born in Kenya. Oh, take a break. It's astonishing. Well, I've said it before, and I'll be happy to say it again. You know, I have my little list, and when the lights go out, if there's enough time, and I can find my way through the murk, there's several people that I want to pay a last visit to. We'll be right back. Emails here. First one from Prairie 2, who writes, weather report. Over the next 3 days, the U.S. will be treated to what is predicted to be the worst winter storm ever in this country. Yeah, did you see that on the news tonight? 2,100-mile-long hurricane. Prairie 2 says, the cost for coping with the snowfall, the ice storms, and the damage it causes will be billions. A quarter inch of ice can cause power lines and other infrastructure damage that takes weeks to repair. The storm is predicted to blanket a huge area with up to 2 inches of ice. The right-wingers know this is just random chance or God's wrath on the queers and Democrats or just about anything but global warming. After all, it's cold out, isn't it? These geniuses can't grasp that winter storms are driven by heat the same as summer storms. Speaking of summer storms, F5 tornadoes are appearing further and further north and in greater numbers. The succession of winter storms has been described as winter hurricanes. Well, guess what's coming in the summer? Of course, with drastically shifting global weather patterns, there is no predicting what kind of weather we will have in any given year. Weather in general could be unusually mild for years, and then we could get weather systems that would require creating new designations, like F6 tornadoes or F6 hurricanes. But it's probably just God out after the queers, right? Yeah, global climate change. What? It's cold out. From Kay, our education affairs correspondent. Mike, just heard the last segment of the show in which you rhetorically asked why Americans are so insulated from political reality. I'm going to answer the question anyway. While listening to the car radio today, I heard a caller to a program on Green 960 talk about her, quote, concerns over what was happening in Egypt, end quote. She expressed a sense of foreboding about these events. As the host tried to explain that, in fact, people in Egypt are rising up against over 30 years of dictatorship, it was clear that the caller wanted to accept this wanted to accept that this is a democratic movement. However, she had been listening to the mainstream media over the past few days and could therefore not integrate this fact with the crap she'd been hearing or reading in the American press. Just one example, here's Wolf Blitzer's Danger, Danger, Fear, Fear report on the events in Egypt. Blitzer is talking with the Egyptian ambassador to the U.S. to get his sense of the security situation. Blitzer: how does that happen? 1,000 prisoners escaped from a prison outside of Cairo and are now running amok. Egyptian ambassador: well, it's certainly disturbing news, and it's a demonstration of a degree of chaos and a lack of security that has emanated from these events. Blitzer: what happened to the police? Ambassador: it is unclear to what extent the police forces are still undertaking their responsibilities. And then the anchor says, the lack of police presence is glaring. Bands of looters are treating Cairo like their own private playground, forcing people to arm themselves in their own neighborhoods. Okay, that's the end of it. Kay writes, as you said recently, Mike, it is, if it isn't full of danger and fear, the American press doesn't bother. And since the realities that led to these events are just boring history, it would be much too dry for American audiences. To get their daily requirement of danger and fear, they'd likely switch over to Nancy Grace to hear the details about the latest missing co-ed. So Americans like the caller I heard today are left with the impression that what is taking place in Egypt is a negative development. Even after being presented with the facts about Mubarak's dictatorship, the U.S. relation with the Mubarak regime, and so forth, the caller was unable to integrate this information and see the situation as it is, instead of the way the American press wants her to see it. Chalk up another one for the mainstream media. Okay. Yeah, that's the problem. That's why I so strongly recommend that you go to English.aljazeera.net if you want information about what is happening in Egypt or in the Middle East, period. You know, Al Jazeera is not run by a bunch of evil Islamic terrorists who want to rip your head open and rip out your Christian brain and replace it with a Muslim brain. It really isn't like that at all. Which is what a lot of people in this country would have you believe, right? Want some weather from down under? Is this John writes this? Yes, well, we just finished the floods. One cyclone has passed inland without much effect. However, a giant wet is heading toward poor Queensland. And meanwhile, Sydney is effing hot, off the charts, and is meant to be the rest of the week. Queensland is rebuilding. What if they're halfway through and then get another bunch of floods? Yeah, well, I don't know. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's moving right along.
I hear you. Good talking to you again. Hey, I want to talk to you about Egypt. I want to make one quick comment about your previous caller that was talking about the tar sands oil.
Okay.
Maybe the people in your chat room can look this up and get some better information. There was a report came out in 2005 about all this peak oil stuff, mm-hmm. and it definitely mentioned the tar sands and everything else. And it was called the Hirsch Report. It's about 100-something pages of PDF file charts and graphs and all this, talking about how we expected to make up the shortfall in peak oil by exploiting the tar sands and many mm-hmm. other types of ways to get oil.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it, but
well, that report was defended. It was commissioned by the Department of Energy, and it was delivered to Congress way back in 2005, and it described the situation exactly. And she's so right about how much energy it takes, how much fresh water it takes, how much garbage it produces, mm-hmm. and how low grade the oil is. It's all true.
Yeah.
But at any rate, let's go on to Egypt, because that's where we need to be. Okay.
Okay.
The you were talking about your take on it was that that the people were being told people in power in mm-hmm. Egypt were being told to use the weapons. I said, yes, this is absolutely spot on. I said, I'd love for WikiLeaks to get some of these diplomatic cables from Hillary Clinton's staff to these people over there, telling them to get those damn weapons out and use them. Why do you think we gave them to you?
Really?
Go over there and kill these people and stop this thing. You know, that's what they're hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were saying that we were nervous about this. I actually how should I say it? I'm excited about it. Because this is what needs to happen all over this world, and nowhere does it need to happen worse than right here in the United States. Because you're never going to solve this at the ballot box, ever. After the Citizens United and the rest of this, you are never going to solve this at the ballot box.
What would you see as an expected outcome, though, if let's leave the rest of the world aside, because we could talk all night about that. But in the United States, what would you see as the expected outcome if the people in this country decided to do what the Egyptians have done? And the Egyptians have not been violent. They have had violence perpetrated against them by Mubarak's thugs. But if an equivalent number of Americans, or a relative number of Americans relative to the Egyptian population, took to the streets, what do you think would happen?
Well, you know, it would be millions here. They're a country of 80 million over there, plus a few, you know. But it would take millions here. But, you know, nobody over there in Egypt right now is working. Everything has stopped.
Right.
The Internet's down. The phones are down. All of the news is down. But the whole country is grind to a halt. And that is exactly what we'd have to have happen here. The problem is right now, right here, that if this started happening here, it might very possibly degenerate into some kind of a civil war, because the people here are so misinformed. You got half the population, at least half the population, that has not a clue mm-hmm. about what's going on. And mm-hmm. you got the other half that knows, but unfortunately, there's area for conflict between those groups. We need to come together as a country and realize what's being done to us. And places like WikiLeaks, like I said, a lot of the stuff that happened in Tunisia was actually a result of WikiLeaks communiques that were leaked.
That's what I've been reading over the weekend, yeah.
If we could just, you know, support this type of journalism, I actually, you know, saw Julian Assange's thing on 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I didn't, but I'm gonna look at that segment. It's my understanding that he demolished whoever it was that was interviewing him.
Absolutely. It's on Common Dreams. You can go watch it there.
Okay.
You can actually watch the video. But what we really need is a massive education of the American people. And once they understand what's being happened to them, we'll have this. We'll have people, just a general strike, people not doing anything, and bringing this government and these corporations to a halt. Mm-hmm. It has to happen that way. There's no other way for it to happen. There's no other way to facilitate a change in the United States right now, the way they've got the politics and the ballot box and
yeah,
the party.
Right. And I'm afraid, if that's the right word, I'm concerned is a better word, that it's going to take, nobody is listening in this country, and it's going to take millions of us in the street. Mike, I have to leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate it, pal.
That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your checks are free. Now you dress, your face is a mess. You can't get enough, but enough ain't the test.
Before the hour. Hey, I want to mention this again, Truth Seekers, about Valentine's Day. Come on, it's fun. You know it is. It's coming up soon. Better plan ahead. Avoid the last-minute rush. Pro Flowers has shown interest in the program here. I use them, so they're offering my listeners an incredible deal for this week only. And this for real, for this week only. You can order what they describe as the 100 Blooms of Love. It comes with a free glass vase for only $19.99, and for my listeners only, you can get an exclusive upgrade for $10. You can add chocolates, a teddy bear, and a lavender bath kit. Imagine the look on your sweetheart's face when he or she sees this huge bouquet with all the extras. Seriously. These blooms are guaranteed Valentine's Day delivery and are guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days. Here's what you can do. Call 800-PRO-FLOWERS and mention Malloy. Or go to proflowers.com, click on the microphone in the top right corner, and type in Malloy. This offer expires Friday, so order now. I know a lot of people say, well, it's just a Hallmark holiday. I happen to think it's kind of sweet. And so does my daughter. So there. As she got all of her classroom Valentines together this week, because we're not going to be here next week when they have their little Valentine's party. God, did that bring back the memories. You know, your mom would go to the store, go to the drugstore, and buy one of those packets of a million Valentine's cards for $1.98. You know what I'm talking about, those cheesy little ones. Well, now, they don't have those anymore, I guess. Kathy went to the Walgreens and got a packet for the little boys in her class, the 10 little boys and the 11 little girls or whatever it is. And, my God, they're 3D. when you know, it's one of those cards when you wiggle it this way and that way, it, I don't know, the heart changes into a death's head or something. No, not really. I'm just kidding. But so Molly was addressing those to all her little friends. Well, I don't know if they're all her friends, but her classmates. And I think that's sweet. I really do. I really do. Now, Mother's Day and Father's Day, those are Hallmark contrived holidays, but Valentine's Day, oh, nobody says I love you anymore. Well, I know you do. But you know, Murray Roman said, any of you people ever remember a comedian named Murray Roman? I bet you don't. From back in the late 60s, early 70s, Murray Roman, do you know who I'm talking about? Does anybody remember Murray Roman? One of the things he said was, or was it Brother Dave? You can't beat people up and have them say, I love you. Anybody remember Murray Roman? John is in Lexington, Kentucky. Hey, John.
Hey, Uncle Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was asking Kathy earlier, but Mike from South Carolina kind of stole my thunder, so I wanted to tell him thank you. But what would be the chances of you think something like what's happening in Egypt now happening over here, and would the Koch brothers actually use the capitalistic right-wing army to put people like us that would revolt against the government? Would they actually use them to put us down?
Well, see, I don't think a revolt in this country would be against the government. The government of the United States, where it concerns, as far as I'm concerned, where it concerns policies domestic and foreign, has become totally ineffective. What is driving American policy or government policy in this country and abroad are these filthy, rat bastard, gangster capitalists, these corporations. You know, we don't have a one person dictatorship like that the people can rebel against, like Mubarak, for example. We don't have that. So what we have is a shadow government in this country. It's been there for decades, if not generations. These slimy capitalist thugs who don't want to play by the rules. You know, the country was set up to give the capitalists a chance to make money if they played by the rules, if they didn't, dump all their trash in our nest, our home, if they didn't put poison food out on the market, if they didn't put poison into our rivers and lakes and streams, we would allow the capitalists to go ahead and play and make money. But they didn't do that. They decided to just pound everybody into the ground and say, to hell with you, we want everything. So if a revolution comes here, I can't see in any way where it'd be directed against the administration, against the Barack Obama administration, or hell, even a George W. Bush administration. Bush was an absolute puppet. Obama is more of a go-along, get-along type of guy, a big disappointment equally, but the revolt would come, we don't have people in government who are stealing us, blind and taking from us. It's the people in the gangster capitalists who are doing this. So why should we go after, the government? I realize that there's a lot of stuff going on that the government, so-called, is doing, but who controls, who manipulates, who owns, who buys and pays for the government? That would be these filthy capitalist predators. Those are the ones who have got to be held accountable, I think, John. Hey, listen, man, I got to leave it there. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Don't forget, go to English.AlJazeera.net and look at their video feed. For God's sake, don't listen to the Wolf Blitzer or the rest of these people if you want the truth. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.